In his new book, Through the Perilous Fight, 6 Weeks That Saved the Nation, Washington Post reporter Steve Vogel tells the gripping, little-known story of a pivotal 6 weeks in U.S. history. The perilous fight that preserved the new nation at a time of grave danger, severed remaining ties with America's colonial past, and inspired the country's most indelible song, The Star-Spangled Banner. The title of the book, Through the Perilous Fight, 6 Weeks That Saved the Nation. Steve Vogel, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Joe.
What brought you to this time period of the summer of 1814?
Well, you know, I grew up in the Washington area and was always struck by the amount of historical information and markers we have about the Civil War, which is all fought around here in Virginia and Maryland. And yet we go back 50 years earlier to the War of 1812, and you had this amazing episode where Washington was burned by the British, and the British were rampaging up and down the Chesapeake Bay and attacked Baltimore, and we really knew very little about it. You don't see very many markers in the D.C. area about that, and everybody sort of knows little bits and pieces of the story behind the Star-Spangled Banner, but it seemed like there was a pretty dramatic tale to be told about the whole episode.
Give us a timeline of what brought us up to this particular episode, of what was brewing before the six-week period that you cover in the book.
Well, you know, a lot of people forget that in the War of 1812, it was the United States that declared war on Great Britain and not the other way around. We often think, oh, well, I guess England wanted to take back the colonies. And they may have wanted to do that, but it was mostly the United States was upset at British trampling of U.S. sovereignty. You know, they were stopping our ships at sea, taking sailors off, and interfering with trade and things like that. And we had declared war in 1812 and hadn't really been able to accomplish too much in that in the conflict. And by 1814, Great Britain was wrapping up its war with Napoleon, and it turned its attention to the United States. And they were quite eager to put an end to this festering war in North America, and they sent an army of invasion over to basically put an end to this war. And one of their targets was Washington. They sent an army of some of Wellington's most experienced soldiers over. And they landed in Maryland, and that's basically where our story picks up.
It is a British invasion. It captures Washington, and they were the White House, the Capitol, of course, become smoldering ruins. They were at the center of the attack, right? They were the intended target.
Yes. The British really wanted to do was divert American resources from our attacks on Canada. And what you had going on up in upstate New York and all around that area, as well as Michigan and all along the borders with what was then British North America, today Ontario and Quebec, you had quite a bit of fighting going on. And the English wanted to relieve pressure on that front by taking the war to the American, what was then the American heartland, including the capital. And, you know, the thought was that if they could attack the capital and attack what was then the economic center of the country, they could make this war too costly for the Americans to fight and, you know, force perhaps a collapse of the government and force the U.S. to sue for peace on British terms.
You write in the book of what impact that burning of Washington had on the nation, and ultimately what impact it had in uniting a very young nation.
Yeah, it really did. In a way, it was when word got around the country that, you know, Washington had been captured and the capital and what was then known as the President's House had been burned. It was quite a shock. It was somewhat similar to what we saw around the country after Pearl Harbor, or even 9/11. the country had been pretty divided about the war up to that point. When word got out that Washington had been burned, it really, not only did it shock the nation, it really angered the nation. And what we saw in coming weeks, including in Baltimore and also the battle that was fought up in New York at Plattsburgh, was really key to changing the outcome of that war.
Tell us a little bit about President Madison and what James Madison's reaction was as the city was being burned, and how ultimately he was able to turn that around and ultimately rise to the occasion.
Yeah, you know, James Madison, of course, one of the great figures in American history, essentially the author of the Constitution in many respects. A real genius at that, but his performance as commander-in-chief when he became president had not been too stellar. I mean, first of all, the U.S. Military was really unprepared for this war. It was probably a bad idea to declare it in the first place. And then his cabinet was really wrecked by squabbling, and there had been very little agreement, little done to protect Washington because the resources were being kept up on the Northern Front. But Madison, despite all that, when Washington is attacked, he certainly showed great personal courage. He rides out to the battlefield to try to direct the troops to some extent. He didn't want to interfere with the military command, but he wanted to be there. And he actually becomes the first president to come under fire and came pretty close almost to being captured, even killed, though some rockets flew over his head that the British were firing. He was mocked at the time. And really, in history, we often say, oh, James Madison fled from the White House. And Dolly Madison is the one who stayed to rescue the portrait of George Washington. And the story is a lot more complicated than that. And Madison did not actually leave the White House till after Dolly. He went back from the battle, tried to organize his cabinet into some kind of semblance of a retreat, but then fled into Virginia ahead of the British. The British came, burned the city. And Madison came back to the city 2 days later after the British had left, and he really recognized that at that moment a show of strength was needed. There were a lot of people that were saying, let's abandon the capital, you know, even surrender. And Washington, a lot of folks were saying, should not be the capital anymore. It was too vulnerable. But Madison believed that the United States needed to reoccupy the city and try to exhibit some sort of demonstration to England and to Europe that the capital was not abandoned.
So a few weeks later, 3 weeks later, when the British try to ultimately deliver this knockout punch to the U.S. in Baltimore, this is really the turnaround. What led to the American success in Baltimore?
You know, a few things. I mean, part of it was Washington itself. As mentioned, was such a shock for the nation. It really drew militia from around the region down to Baltimore. Everybody figured Baltimore would be the next target. And, you know, in the first couple of days after the attack, Baltimore was teetering on the verge of capitulation. But they had a smart, savvy commander of the militia there, who had a lot more experience than the commander who had been in charge of Washington, General Winder. Sam Smith was in charge in Baltimore, and he had a pretty good scheme of defense with some really dug-in lines. They also had help from a couple of forgotten heroes of the U.S. Navy, including Captain John Rogers, as well as Oliver Hazard Perry, these very well-known and famous Navy heroes who were in Baltimore to more or less buck up the morale of the city and bring in some of their experienced Navy sailors who could help man some of the big guns. And the British made some mistakes. They delayed before attacking Baltimore. They weren't quite sure whether they wanted to do it, whether they wanted to wait till later. They certainly hated Baltimore with a passion. It was a center of privateering ships that attacked English shipping. But they hesitated before the attack. It gave the Americans some time to regroup, to come up with a good scheme of defense. And they when the British showed up in September, the Americans were ready.
You, in our final moments, you do write about, as I indicated in the introduction, you do write about the story of the Star-Spangled Banner, how it became both an anthem and a symbol. And you write throughout the book, really, about Francis Scott Key, who was really an opponent of the war, and how ultimately he came to write this song, which really was almost a commission, wasn't it?
Well, you know, Francis Scott Key, I mean, it's a fascinating story. We sometimes seem to think he just was beamed down from outer space and showed up at Baltimore Harbor during the bombardment. But, you know, his story is one of someone who was very opposed to the war. He actually was rooting for the Americans to lose in their invasion of Canada. He thought it was a completely unjust thing to do. And he ends up signing up, though, for the militia to defend, you know, his home in Washington and Maryland, and then goes on this rescue mission to try to save an elderly doctor, family friend, who'd been taken prisoner by the British after they left Washington. And, you know, he ends up on this truce ship as a British detainee watching the bombardment. And he had friends in Baltimore, family members there. And he was afraid that the British certainly had every intention of burning the city if they could. And watching that bombardment was such an emotional event for him. And the drama of the moment, not knowing what flag would be flying over the Fort McHenry in the morning, was something he captured in this song that once published in newspapers around the country, really almost went viral in a sense. It was like a photo of the Marines raising the flag at Iwo Jima 150 years later, where you had this image that was being painted of Key, of the flag still flying over Fort McHenry after this tremendous bombardment. And it really was something that kind of gave the American flag a new symbolism and meaning in America that has continued through 200 years.
The name of the book is Through the Perilous Fight, 6 Weeks That Saved the Nation. The book is published by Random House. Steve Ogle, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Through the Perilous Fight, 6 Weeks That Saved the Nation. The book is published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.